Now it is my great pleasure to invite Nikki to come on in and share with us today.
Thanks, everyone. I'm just going to get rid of that little okay thing. Thanks, everyone. I'm in Nikki. My name, bleh, put my teeth in. My name is Nikki, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'd like to say I'm glad to be here, but my nerves have been fizzing through my body. And I actually had quite an emotional evening and morning. And so the last place I wanted was to come and be vulnerable in front of all you lot. But I think the difference in recovery is that I actually turn up and show up for things now, even if I don't want to, if I've committed. And so, there's a huge difference in my life now from before I came into OA. So I live in on the south coast of England, by the seaside. We only moved here 4 years ago, and I'm still very excited about the sea. And for me, the sea and the waves and the peace down there, it gets me in touch with my higher power. I find it's a really spiritual place to be where I can center myself. So I feel very gifted to live near the sea. So I grew up in a little village outside, about 30 miles from London. My father was an alcoholic and a gambler, and my mum popped Valium to cope. I had a twin brother and a younger brother, and my childhood was just felt messy. It felt messy. It felt difficult. I felt a lot of fear as a child. I coped with all of that. For me, from an early age, I loved food. I only loved sweet food. I wasn't interested in savory food. I loved sweet food. And it became a bit of an obsession. And I would either hoard it and eat it really slowly. So my brothers, so I'd be there, they'd all have finished theirs, my brothers, and I would hoard it, or I would eat it so fast it hardly touched the surface. So right from an early age, it became an obsession. And that kind of escalated. And I think for me, the addiction did escalate. It started off with loving sweet food and being obsessed to me being obsessed with my body. I remember at the age of, I mean, I only went up to 175 pounds at age 20. So I can't be a 100 pounder. My experience was different. I am a compulsive overeater, but I also used to starve myself and I used to purge. So I tick the boxes. But the obsession was absolutely there. And at the age of 11, I remember I was a skinny child, and I remember pinching bits of flesh at the age of 11 and telling my neighbour's mum how fat I was, and she was horrified. They call it fat between the ears. My God, it was there, the obsession. I felt fat when I wasn't. My life still was chaos. I was chaotic. I had undiagnosed ADHD, which was only diagnosed 2 months ago, bizarrely. I was up and I was down and I was chaotic, and I found life really difficult. As time went on, my food progressed into being totally obsessed about my body image and my food, and I would compare myself with everybody. I didn't feel good enough. I felt paranoid. I felt fearful a lot of the time. I never felt comfortable in people's company. I could never be myself. A, I didn't know who I was. But B, I would change depending on which group I was in. I was so desperate to be liked. I people pleased. I said yes to everything and got myself in terrible situations. I didn't know how to say no. My life was chaotic. And what I felt towards the end, when I couldn't get a hold, I would go on these strict diets and starve myself. And then when I picked up one bit of food, I would binge and binge and binge, and I hated myself. It was like Groundhog Day. It went on and on. I lost stone, I gained stone, I lost stone. And I was in despair. In fact, although I went down the path of alcoholism as well, my mum was far more concerned about my eating than my alcoholism. Not that ever to minimize that, but for me, she thought I would kill myself because I was so desperate with the way my food was going. It was a horrific place to be. I was very lucky because my dad went into AA when I was 11, and when I was 19, he told me about OA, and I was a 19-year-old. I thought, how embarrassing! I can't go somewhere called Overeaters Anonymous. Yes, it was okay to throw up down the toilet. It was okay to pinch people's food off their plate when I was waitressing. It was okay to take food from a bin. It was okay to do all these disgusting things. But it wasn't in my head all right to go to Overeaters Anonymous. You know, the insanity. I was not a sane person. I went to my first meeting of OA with the person who is still my sponsor. Years, I mean, third, this was 39 years ago before I came into OA properly, and I kind of got in the lifeboat rather than kind of held onto the sides. And oh my God, do you know my life changed? And I feel quite emotional that my life changed from that one meeting, because I got hope. There was a lady there who said she had not binged or starved or purged for a year, and I could not believe it. I couldn't go days without binging, and I just, so I'm emotional actually. God, I feel really emotional. And so it gave me hope. I had hope that I could actually get this life. Then I plunged back into uni. There were no meetings around. I wasn't willing. I was drinking like a fish, smoking like a Trojan, obsessed with everything and anything. I was chaotic. So I did use OA as my life raft. I would dash in and out whenever I got home, and I would get abstinent and I'd go back into chaos. And it was a horrific way to be. I don't recommend that. For 2 years, I did that. It was incredibly painful. But what I did find was a higher power. And that higher power and my sponsor kept my head above water. But that's no way to live for me. That's no way to live. I could have gotten a life raft, and I decided just to keep myself here. So, oh, I am really emotional. It's mad. It's not mad. It's understandable. Anyway, I finished uni, put down the alcohol. And my OA started working. I started working it. I started going to three meetings. You know, I was going up to London. It was a train journey to London. I would drive with friends an hour away. I got to meetings. There were no Zoom meetings. I picked up the phone. I got myself a sponsor. I became willing to put down the food that was too compulsive for me. And I tell you, I did not want to put that food down. It was like a bereavement. And my sponsor said, I just couldn't imagine a life without this food. And my sponsor said to me, do it for today. Do it for one day, day tight container. So I do it for one day. And she went, right, now do it for today. And it was another day, you know, and we're 36 years later, and it is all one day at a time. And it is an absolute miracle. I mean, it's not an option for me now. Occasionally, if I glance in a shop with lovely things out on display, I know that if I sat and ate every single one of those things in that shop, I would still feel, I would never fill that gap, because that is not a food shape gap. That is a higher power shape gap. It's a self-esteem shape gap. It is a fellowship type gap. It is away from loneliness type gap. It is not a food shape gap, you know, and it took me a long time to learn that. For me, with my sponsor, the steps were really, really important, because you had the madness of the food and the drink and the physical and the weight and the body and the obsession. And then you had the fact that I never dealt with emotions. I couldn't put labels on emotions. I didn't know who Nikki was, the spiritual side. I had no, you know, my faith was coming and going. And so I wasn't in touch with me. So working the steps for me helped me get to know Nikki, and it helped me get to go another way of doing life rather than just doing it all on my own. And it made me start trusting. I remember I wanted to do my step four with my sponsor, and there was one deep, dark, horrible little secret in my life that I was not going to tell anyone. And my sponsor had said, you're as sick as your secrets. And this thing went round my head, sick as your secrets, sick as your secrets. I can't tell her, sick as your secrets, I'll never get well. And off I went in my own little journey with my head. And so one day I just broke down in front of her, and I just blurted out this secret. And she said, it's okay, I still love you. And oh my God, I can't tell you, that was a turning point for me, because I felt as though if I revealed my true self, which I didn't know what it was, to everybody, they would hate me, despise me, reject me. And she just accepted me. And I, you know, that is the most. That is the hugest gift that I can be given, and that I can give someone, is to accept them as they are. And so the journey began about me getting to know me and putting labels on feelings that I didn't otherwise know what they were. And I think another huge part of my life was building a relationship with a higher power. And my first higher power was hope, because I didn't have any idea of a faith or a religious God. In fact, my family were religious and I just balked against it. It wasn't for me. And so hope was my thing. And then it became the power of the group and the power of what you lot all did and the power of recovery. And then these little God incidents started happening to me. And it was incredible. Each time it happened, I'm like, oh my God, oh my goodness, that's a bit of a coincidence. And oh my goodness. So my friends call it a God nod, and I quite like that. And I mean, I love the fact that we can all choose our own faith, whether it's a religious God or just a faith of the universe, or I call my faith God, but I don't have a religious God for me, but I love the fact that some people do. And I love the fact that no one's excluded. And I suppose what I see, I know it sounds a bit strange, but my God has to be wise and strong. And I sort of see it as a mixture between Hagrid and Dumbledore in Harry Potter, because you've got the wisdom and the strength, and together they make my brilliant higher power. And my dad, who is in AA, always used to say that God is an untapped resource. And I think that's right. Why am I always surprised when I ask for help and I get it? Why am I always surprised? Or when God, fancy that, God thinks of a solution I've never even occurred to me. And I'm like, oh my God, how did he think of that? He's so brilliant. My little mind on its own cannot work it out. And I practice being with God by giving God a bit of time. Because if you build up a friendship with someone, you can't say to them, I want to be your friend, and not contact them for 10 months, because they'd be like, yeah, some friend you are. So it felt like I needed to give my higher power time in order to spend some time with my higher power. And I have to tell you, as a bit of an ADHD head, spending time with God in meditation was not an easy thing for me, but I have, and I go in and out of it, but I do have a relationship with my higher power. I do talk to my higher power. I do ask for help. I do bits of meditation. I do prayers, and I am so grateful. What this program has offered me is a solution, and it's a solution to every bit of life. Before, I had no solution. I wrote down, I did, that was my illness. And this is all the things I kind of scribbled about recovery. There's so much recovery that I could share about, because in my illness, I've written down ill recovery. In addiction, destroys despair, shame, and it tears down. It brings up problems. With recovery, it mends and heals. It's a solution. It gave me hope, and this solution is with everything that happens in life. For example, this morning, last night, I had a really difficult conversation with my brother, and it was really upset me, and I was really upset. Okay, so my old way of dealing with it was would have been anger. I would have lashed out. I'd have been angry. I'd have been a tornado. I'd have reacted. What I did was I cried. I shared about it. Someone gave me some advice. I don't always like advice or suggestion. I don't like it, but actually, I need to hear it, because I need to know a perspective apart from my own little head. And so what I was able to do was unpick it and look at what my part was, look at his emotions, and look at what action I needed to take. And I was able to make amends to him, and how amazing that I can heal relationships when they break a little bit, rather than destroying them completely and hammering them with a hammer. I used to destroy relationships. My brother always said, you have no filter between your brain and your mouth. And he was right. I had no filter. It came out, and I've got more of a filter now, and God gives me a filter, other people gives me a filter. And what other people do is they take me out of my isolation, and sometimes I can still go into the I self me. I can go into, oh, I can't share that. People will judge. I'm not good enough. The perfectionism is probably one of my biggest defects, and it can still be there. It can still catch up with me and say, you should be better at 36 years. I.e., you should be perfect, and yet actually, I'm shown time and time again that all humans are human, and that we're not perfect, and it's okay not to be perfect. And it's a lesson I have to keep continually relearning. What I've learned as well is courage. I remember my courage. I had no courage. I had no courage to be me. I had no courage because I didn't have courage and have faith. How could I have courage without faith and trust? Now, my son has quite a few disabilities, and when he was younger, I had to fight for him. I had to go into the teacher's office and say, I'm not happy about this. I had to go to the headmistress and say, I'm going to sit here until I get the information I want you to give me. And oh my God, it was terrifying. It was terrifying, because authority was something I was really scared of. But I went in. What this program gave me was the courage to do one baby step at a time to face the challenges. And for me, if I build something up into this big task, I put it off. And if I put it off and I procrastinate, then things become difficult and I feel bad. And so tiny baby steps, you know. I had a dream. We follow dreams as well. It's not just all about hard work. I mean, I have to work the program, but it's about dreams and creativity and feeding our soul as well. And I had a dream when I was 5 to write a book. And I wanted to write books and I dreamt about it. And I was a dreamer. I remember someone had been discovered as a gymnast, so I hung upside down for hours on the on the in the local park, hoping I'd be discovered. I mean, I was insane, you know. So how can I write a book without, how can I have a book published without writing one? So one big bit at a time, I went on courses and I wrote one book, didn't publish it, wrote another, wrote it, and eventually I self-published my own book. I've never written another one since then, but I have this book, you know, and it's just all about feeding my soul and not letting fear stand in my way. It's about relationships and dealing with, on a daily basis, nurturing my relationships. Oh goodness, I've gone quite dry, I've dried up. That's really unlike me. I'm going to have a little look through my notes. Hold on. I want to talk out to the newcomers, really. When I was a newcomer, I could not, you know, someone a year was just unattainable. I could not imagine a life without being in this cycle of binge starving. And do you know, for me, being honest and getting to the meetings and getting a sponsor and just keep coming, you know, I remember going to the meeting once and I felt so much shame because I binged again and I didn't want to share it, and I did share it and I felt though there was judgment in the meeting, that there probably wasn't, but I felt it, but I still kept going because I was so desperate, you know. I kept going and it gets easier. And it gets easier, and I get tough moments, and it gets easier, but you know, it gets easier. And I think things that were really difficult at the beginning become easier, and then other things, you know, the road narrows and changes. I have to say, as a sponsor, I get so much from sponsoring, because when I pass on what I've got, and everyone sponsors in different ways, and I think that again is so lovely, but it's a real gift to be able to pass on what I have. And by me passing on what I have makes me know that I keep on doing it, because I can't say to suggest something that I do to a sponsee if I'm not doing it. It keeps my program clean. And also, the joy of seeing someone come from the crippling effects of the illness into recovery is extraordinary. And also, when they, if I'm having a few days where I'm isolating a bit and my sponsee calls me, it takes me out of that isolation. And I think that's one of the huge things that I find with the program, is that connection is absolutely key, because isolation is in my DNA and not being honest is in my DNA. And so coming here and being with other people who I identify with is incredible. And I also want to share as well about, I also have, I suffer with chronic fatigue, and that has been crippling for me over the last 15 years. And then another health condition went on top of that. And I found that working my program around another illness has been quite tricky. And again, it's affected, you know, my mind and how I am and how I feel, and has made me more vulnerable. And yet, you know, what is extraordinary about this fellowship is I can still, you know, like I've actually found it quite hard to have my camera on for a long time, and it can make me feel quite isolated. And it's been so brilliant that Judy asked me to do this share, because I've suddenly realised what I'm missing out on by not being present for me visually and not arriving a bit early and saying hello to everyone, because I miss that connection. So, you know, it's actually been a real gift, Judy, you asking me to do this share, even though I was really nervous and felt like, you know, went a little bit dry at one time and felt like it wasn't where I
Gentle
wanted to be. I
reminder.
know it's where I need to be. So anyway, I'm sort of coming to the end of my steam, which is unusual, because my husband will tell you my steam can go on for a long time. But thank you all for being there. I just want to say as well that I get really appreciate all the people that do service in this meeting. I've done so much service in all the face-to-face groups for years and years and years, and I've got so much from it. And it, you know, it means these meetings happen. And I'm just really grateful for you all for what you do. And I get so much from coming to these meetings, and I need to maybe give a little bit more and start sharing and turning up properly. So I'll work on that. Thank you.